Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today I have paranormal author Shadow Leitner with me today. Thank you so much for joining
Thank you for having me.
Welcome. So, just give me a little introduction to how you got into romance. Like, as a reader, what was the first book you ever read?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it starts out early with... you know, princesses and knights and mm-hmm. and those kind of fantasies. I think my first book was, or my favorite first book was a fantasy called Shadow Castle, and it was about, you know, a fairy prince who fell in love with a human woman, and of course it was, you know, mid-grade level, so they fell in love and got immediately married mm-hmm. and, you know, mysteriously had a whole bunch of kids, and the stories were all about them. But it was, you know, it set the stage, and of course it evolved into my pre-adolescent and adolescent years with the classics, Ivanhoe, Wuthering Heights, Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
And then it got on to more contemporary things, I think. You know, V.C. Andrews.
Oh, is one. Yes.
Very taboo. And of course, The Thorn Birds. Mm-hmm. I read that probably 3 or 4 times. And then my mother, of course, you know, she's, you know, romance is not, and sex is definitely not that, mm-hmm. you know, so she started getting me teen Harlequin books mm-hmm. with the summer romances, and it kind of grew from there. And and I think regardless of what genre I read, I'm mm-hmm. always looking for that love story
sure.
in it. And now I read, you know, it's a big palette of mm-hmm. everything from cyborg erotica. I just got over some... just finished a book there, and a lot of YA, of course, paranormal romance mm-hmm. and other things, and J.R. Ward, just a few.
Yeah. You said, what was that, V.C. Andrews?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I totally forgot until you just brought that up. Yeah, I read that in middle school, yeah. and I, like, got one of my girlfriends to read it. I'm like, you have to read this. This is so crazy.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, we read, like, the whole series, the My Sweet Audrina, Flowers in the Attic. And it was just like, what is happening? This is insane. Yet we couldn't stop reading it.
No.
And I'm pretty sure my mom never knew I read those. And I wish that somebody would have given me, like, maybe like a Harlequin teen or something like that when I was younger and really understood. But yeah, because those books were just off the wall and like...
That's what made him so good.
Yeah. But as a seventh grader, like, I had no right. business reading those. Right. But it was fun.
Yeah,
and that was probably
the same for me.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I was saying earlier, like, probably the first, like, real, like, where I really discovered, like, people were falling in love was in Gone with the Wind. And I just loved it, even though today, you know, many people will say it's not a true romance, which it probably isn't. But there's just a lot of love happening in that. And so I really enjoyed it. So. Now, how did you transition to being an author?
Well, I had my start in performing arts. I think I've always, you know, wrote. I mm-hmm. wrote when I was younger. I wrote little stories and poetry and kind of things. But I went into performing arts and was living in California, so I was doing a lot of screenwriting and studying for that to showcase my mm-hmm. Other work. And that got a lot more notice than my acting, of course. And, mm-hmm. and but I started a performance festival, and it just kind of was a natural thing into writing. But again, I was writing for screen and stage. And then I moved back to Maryland with 2 small children and became more serious about actually putting down the words in novel form.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was something that was an active decision. It was just came out of not being able to leave with 2 small children and having a full-time job and not really having a community here
mm-hmm.
Or not having had time to go out and build a community
right.
for myself. So I didn't really know what to do with myself. And so I started just writing, reading a lot with my downtime,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of grew from there.
And so you just decided one day, like, I'm going to publish this or attempt to publish it, or, like, how does that
happen?
Yeah,
it started to become a real idea. Well, I have to say probably Twilight.
Okay.
You know, I come out. I'm really love my vampires, Anne Rice, and mm-hmm. And those kinds of books. And I had discovered Twilight probably 2 weeks before the release of Breaking Dawn.
Okay.
So I was
the book or the movie?
The book.
Okay.
And yeah, no, I read all the books before the movies came
sure.
out.
Sure.
But I think it was a movie ad advertisement mm-hmm. that turned me on to the books. So I went out and read, and I was like, "Well, I better hurry up." You know, the releases of the fourth book is coming out, mm-hmm. and I went to the midnight release. I'm this, you know, older lady with no teenage daughter, and I'm there for the midnight release. I'm the woman that's sitting out in their car mm-hmm. reading this book. But I think after that, it really just kind of hit dawn on me. I was like, I can do this, and I'm going to go through my journals of ideas and start writing. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And then it wasn't until, you know, I really became active in groups and, mm-hmm. you know, the Maryland Romance Writers. I joined a couple years ago after going to the Baltimore Festival.
Oh, okay.
So I met them. And I actually went to the book fair, the first book fair they had here in Frederick, attempted to have, and actually was introduced to Jennifer Armentrout's books.
Okay.
And so it just kind of took up from there. Mm-hmm. That I was like, this is, you know, can be something.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do.
Yeah, I would say, because I read all the Twilight books, like when they came out, mm-hmm. I devoured them.
Absolutely.
And I was like, this is equal parts ridiculous and fantastic.
Yes.
And, you know, because I was in like my 30s and reading it,
right.
But it was great. And, you know, I would say books like Twilight, which were probably geared towards like young adults, same with like Harry Potter, even though obviously it's not a romance, but, you know, books like that really have made it kind of mainstream for adults to enjoy those types of books,
right.
You know, because before, I don't know, I think before that there was a little bit of like stigma, but there always is.
Yeah. No, I like the quick, you know, quick reads too.
Oh, yeah.
You know. I mean, I'm a fairly quick reader mm-hmm. anyway.
But. So am I. So, but yeah. But yeah, because I was working here and a bunch of us were reading Twilight and some of them were like taking forever. I'm like, what is taking you so long?
Oh, my goodness.
Just
yeah.
Finish the book.
I had devoured those first three books, I think, you know, within mm-hmm. that week, right before mm-hmm. Breaking Dawn. Of course, that one that took me, I was really, I'm probably done with it the next morning.
Yeah.
Read it through the night.
Oh, yeah. I'm the same way. I'm like, if a book captures me, I don't want to do anything.
That's right. I don't pick up a book unless I intend to finish it in one fell swoop because
right.
I'll never get back to it if I put it down. And
exactly.
And, life happens. And mm-hmm. so.
Yeah.
I'm usually consumed.
Yeah. And then it also speaks to how romance readers typically, like the majority of us, read so many books,
mm-hmm.
like voracious readers. Like, you know, I did this thing and pulled all these studies, you know, and like 50% of us are reading like 3 or 4 books a week. And it's like, how does
yes.
that even happen? But it does.
And that puts a huge, huge demand on the author.
It does.
To keep producing.
It does.
That works, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, but then it seems like there are, I read contemporary almost exclusively. Mm. And, you know, I see some of these authors that are coming out that are producing books like every 2 to 3 weeks. And it just really makes me question the integrity of it. Like, I get why they do it. Mm. I get it. But, you know, it almost makes me feel like as a reader they're using me. You know, like, I'd prefer to wait for a quality story. But, you know, I don't know. I have so many mixed feelings about it. But I get why it happens.
Yeah, I mean, they say, you know, there's the formulas and
right.
the tropes are pretty, you know, a standard. So, of course, we're all looking for that new kind of twist.
Yeah.
I work a 9-to-5 and have 2 small children, so I'm forced to not be as prolific as that. So
yeah.
I'm forced to drag it out. But
hey, whatever
it works
for you.
It does
yeah.
work.
Yeah. So why, when you really started writing, did you decide that you really wanted to stick with like paranormal and sci-fi and fantasy?
Because that's what I read.
Okay.
And that's what I love to read. And it was just kind of an extension that, you know, when you come off of reading a, you know, good book in the genres for me, and I, you know, you want it to continue on. And so I was, that was, it was becoming an extension of just wanting to just continue to have that feeling of you know, those twists and turns and possibilities and the love affairs and things like that before you could find the next book, you know.
Sure.
It was my fix.
Yeah,
so
I
was, it was my fix to write.
I get it.
To keep that emotion going.
So you brought a book with you today.
I did.
Okay, so if you want to tell me a little bit about the book and then maybe read me an excerpt.
Sure.
Okay.
It's Young Adult Paranormal.
Okay.
It's about a 17-year-old who discovers she is half tree spirit and half human.
Okay.
And she's actually descendant of the Tree of Life. And then so she has a lot of people vying for her.
Okay.
with this special power.
All right.
And this scene is kind of the we're not in Kansas anymore scene. She works in an after school job, working for a auto body shop, and of course the love interest is also working there. And anyway, so there's
okay.
some sparks flying there.
All right.
I attempted to do some homework between customers, but was too distracted to concentrate on it. I couldn't stop peering out at Adam through the glass door leading into the shop. I wanted to shake the urge to keep watching him, but I couldn't keep my eyes off him as he conducted an oil change and then a brake pad replacement. My attention was drawn to the scars running down his face, and they were on his hands, too. Of course, this led me to wonder if they continued down the length of his chiseled body, which wasn't lost even in a pair of work overalls. God, get a hold handle of yourself, Emma. Finally, our boss, Gus, announced that he was taking a customer home so they could leave their car overnight. He asked Adam and me to close up and said he would be back shortly to take me home. Excited I was going to get out of there early, I prepared the evening's meager deposit while Adam locked up the garage. The front door buzzer went off before I finished balancing the cash register. Boy, for being new, Adam was quick. I'll be there in a minute. I kept my eyes on the quarters, not wanting to lose count. There was no reply, so I lifted my head. It wasn't Adam. It was a Herculean man in a long leather coat who was built on enough to step off a cover of GQ. Oh, sorry, sir. We're already closed. I must have forgotten to turn off the sign. The handful of quarters clanked as I dropped them back into the cash drawer. Flustered, I lost count and had to start over. I'm not here about my car. His tone was smooth yet firm, instantly put me on guard. I swallowed hard. Then what can I do for you? My voice shook. He reached inside his coat and pulled out a large double-barreled gun, but didn't aim it at me. Still, I froze, my mind frantically trying to adjust the situation. I was being held up. Nobody ever got held up around here. Come with me, he demanded. Interrupted the inane argument going on in my head. Yet his request didn't register as I pushed the deposit envelope across the counter to him instead. I'm not here for the money. I'm here for you. He sounded a little more agitated. What? Nothing made sense. Then I heard the buzzer again. My heart jumped. I knew it had to be Adam this time. The perpetrator turned his gun on Adam. Back up, corpse, the thief snarled at Adam. I have no business with you. I'm here only for the sapling. Adam didn't move from the front door. Who sent you? He never lost his composure nor took his eyes off the man, who only growled at him. They began speaking to each other in another language. By the heat of their voices, I realized they were arguing, and the dispute quickly escalated. Adam then snapped his head towards me. Emma, run, he yelled, prompting the stranger to turn to me. As he did, Adam smashed him in the back with a metal rack. Angered, the intruder contorted his face as it transformed. His jaw dislocated and dropped, enlarging his mouth to reveal rows of pointed teeth. Then his eyes rolled, turning completely back. The demon let out a shrieking scream, then before turning and shooting Adam full in the stomach. Out of complete horror, I jumped up on the counter, grabbed the cash drawer, and without thinking, I slammed it in the back of the demon's head. The blow knocked him forward as I leapt towards Adam. Blood saturated the front of his shirt and seeped onto the floor. My whole body shook as I desperately tried to think of what to do. The demon stood and let out another writhing scream. It was all I needed to motivate me to move. I sprinted out to my motorcycle and fumbled to get the keys from my pocket. Jumping on the bike, I frantically turned the throttle to peel off onto the gravel, and then I caught Adam staggering across the driveway. The monster emerged from the station behind him, wielding electrified whips as he lashed in the air. Clearly out of my mind, I veered towards Adam as a whip cracked the air behind him with a force that sent him forward. I dropped the bike and jumped off to lift him up, but the demon was already close behind me. "You must come with me." The creature's voice was smooth and steady again. I spun around to face him. He had turned to his chiseled human form. You shot Adam," I stammered, unable to think of anything else to say. "I will not harm you." His voice was almost tender. "What do you want with me?" I cried. But before he could answer, the motorcycle engine revved behind me. Adam's arm wrapped around my waist, forcing the breath out of me as he pulled me onto the bike in front of him in one fluid motion. We lurched forward and careened out of the driveway, only to find the pursuer standing undaunted in the middle of the road. Swerving to miss him caused the bike to skid. The motorcycle crashed, throwing Adam and I off into the road. I slid across the pavement, feeling it rip through my jeans. The demon's steady footsteps advanced as he came for me. I struggled to get to my feet, ignoring the pain shooting up my left leg, but I could only manage to drag myself into a ditch on the side of the road. Every muscle in my body clenched, knowing my fate was sealed, when a screech ripped through the half-lit sky. I rolled onto my side to see a massive bird slashing at my assailant with its claws and beak. My heart tried to pound its way out of my chest before I collapsed, plunking my face into some wet leaves, and passed out.
Ooh, okay. So thank you for reading that.
Yes.
So you mentioned that that's YA.
Yes.
So one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, I think sometimes we like to have like a lot of definitions within. Mm-hmm. But YA is typically like up to like 17 or 18, or what is like a, in your mind, the definition for a YA book?
It's a very good question because it's starting to get murky with new adult. Mm-hmm. I've never really looked at the age, but yeah, I think, you know, 17, even some 18, those new experiences kind of classify as YA. I think it's more about how it's written than, say, ages. I mean, there's some YA, like The Night Circus, for example, that's considered YA, but they're, you know, considerably older. But it's the way it's written, and it's still about the first loves and those first experiences. So I don't like to put an age tag on things. But
that's understandable.
It's generally, I know that producers do. It's like, oh, this is, you know, too old. They're too old for YA. I go, yeah, but it's more about emotional truth in YA than the actual acts. I mean, not that sex can't show up in YA, but I think it's more about the emotion of what's happening than the actual, you know, the mechanics of it.
Sure, that makes sense.
So, and I think once you start getting to new adult and it still has emotion, but it has a lot more mechanics involved.
I like that that tag, emotional truth. I'm going to write that down because otherwise I'll forget it. But I, even though within contemporary, I try not to read a ton of NA, new adult, just because I find it to be kind of angsty. And interestingly enough, I was at the Baltimore Book Festival this year, and Jennifer Armentrout was there and was doing a panel on NA and was talking about how in reviews she, you know, when she reads reviews, just not about her books, just in general, or just hears criticism about new adult, a lot of people will say how it's very angsty. And she was like, well, of course it is. You know, if you think about the age range, you know, but she said she would prefer a better way to, if we could talk about it more, is does it feel authentic to the characters? And I was like, you know, that's actually a really great way to describe it. Because if you think about anywhere, your teens, early 20s, sometimes later than that, you know, life can be very angsty.
But absolutely.
Of course it is. But does it feel authentic? And so when I kind of changed my thought about it, I am reading the books differently to be like, okay, this is very, is it authentic to these characters, to their time frame, to their ages, and what they have going on. And it has helped me be a better reader of new adult. And I've never really read young adult YA, but other than like Twilight. But
and then you get the idea.
Right. Yeah. But that's a great way to talk about it. Emotional truth.
Yeah.
And
I think that it revolves around that, you know, within the relationships and the things they're dealing with. And, yeah, I mean, the voice is got to be different for YA. And even new adult, I think it gets sometimes a bad rap because I think that they're expecting more adult book and come out with, you know, something that's closer to YA. But if you think about your own life and, what you know, things we were doing, going through at those time periods in our life and the loves that we were, the relationships we were involved in.
Well,
it's pretty true.
It's very true. I mean, and sometimes that's why it's like I don't want to read it because it's like I don't want to have to like relive that part of me, you know, but other times I do. I mean, that's the thing that I find great about romance is there's just, you know, you can find really whatever you're looking for, you know, sweet romance, extra dirty romance, like and anywhere in between, you know, and what the characters are doing and, you know, somewhere it's not very angsty or it is. And it's just it's all good. So so within writing, like how have you gone about finding an audience, readers? Like, how do you do that?
How do I do that? It's a very good question. It's all about connection, connecting with people. You know, of course, I'm talking about social media. And the internet is really blown wide, and it is hard to rise up, you know, have a voice and in the noise of the of social media and the internet. But I think if you are authentically, you know, you, then you'll attract those that are, you know, interested in what you have to produce.
Sure.
I'm a visual artist, and I do a lot of digital collage. So my greatest following, of course, is on Instagram.
Okay.
In the community there. And of course, I'm on Pinterest, and yes, I do create boards for my books, but I don't think, oh, this is that character. I try more to go for an aesthetic emotion or feeling rather than, oh, this is the character that plays so-and-so, and this is, so it's more of that. But constantly connecting with those people, letting them know you're a real person. And like I said, I think if you genuinely have something to say, there's going to be genuinely people that want to hear it and want to share that along with you. So just keep putting it out there.
Just
right,
putting it out there. Yeah.
I'm trying to get a little bit more active on Twitter, and I do have a Facebook page. I mean, pretty much on everything from Snapchat to Pinterest, but and it gets a little overwhelming at sometimes to be able to get back to people. You know, I'm trying to put it out there more on those venues. I know it's funny to be an author, and the writing formats are not more my things. I go for more of the visual, formats. But,
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But I've got things to say, so
yeah,
I'll start saying them.
Someone's so listening. Someone is listening somewhere. I mean, I think that's like the key to it. I follow a fair amount of authors, and so it's very interesting to see. I prefer the authors that kind of are different on each of the different mediums because, I mean, Instagram is very different than Facebook and it's very different than Twitter. And so I enjoy it a lot when they're doing something different on Instagram versus what they're showing me on Twitter. Sometimes it's okay if they're the same, but, you know, if I follow you on all three or more platforms, and you're just giving me the same stuff. It's just not that interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I've been into maybe not give the same things. I mean, obviously, you know, when I post something on Instagram, it feeds up into my Twitter. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of crossover, or there might be some of the same information, but just, you know, given in a different way.
Right. And that's kind of what I like.
I do try to do that. And it is a different audience in different mm-hmm. places. You know, there is some crossover, and you try to be cognizant of that. But there is definitely the people that I interact with Instagram are definitely a different people than I see on my mm-hmm. on my Twitter and my Facebook. Yeah. So
it's
sometimes you're like, well, you know, this was a very awesome post, and mm-hmm. you want to share it with other people that aren't following you.
Yeah,
so, but you're right. I do try to make them mm-hmm. Something uniquely different.
Yeah.
So that you're not constantly being barraged, you're right. You know, you feel sorry for those that are following you on everything and being barraged by the same thing. That's irritating. That was irritating for me. I don't want to do that to
right.
people.
Yeah, but then I also get it. You know, a lot of authors are, I mean, I think probably the percentage that are full-time authors, I mean, I don't know. It seems like maybe it's split or it's not. But, you know, a lot of other people are, you know, balancing a full-time career and family, and so it does make it a lot easier to just kind of schedule things and say, I'm gonna put it here and it's gonna go everywhere. So I get it. I get all of it. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't done that, and so that's probably why it's a huge time suck for me, and you only see me on one or two things. Or I'll go in on binges, you know. Mm-hmm. You'll see just a ton of stuff on one format and nothing for months on the other because I'm busy on one. I need to figure that out, scheduling it, and get on top of that because it can be quite a time suck.
Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, how do you balance? Because you mentioned you work full time.
I do.
You have a family. Mm-hmm. And then trying to be being an author also mm-hmm. and, like, mm-hmm. trying to make sure that you're staying up on that. Like, how do you balance it all?
It is balanced. I don't sleep very much. Mm. I drink lots of coffee. I get up really early in the morning before I have to get ready. And I try to get some work done in there. I spend a good hour, and sometimes 2 hours if it's a throw your hair up in a ponytail day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through your day. I have a commute, about hour and a half. Commute, and I actually get some writing done there. Or I read my audiobooks. I put some audiobooks in there. I don't, that's definitely not wasted time mm-hmm. for me. I'm very productive during my commutes. And then I usually am not free again until after the kids go down. Mm. I get, you know, two children in elementary. And so until I get them down, then it's my time. But usually that time is usually spent going through emails, working on critiques for my critique group, things that are not writing,
mm-hmm.
But things that need to be done, social media, that kind of thing. And I try to get to bed at a reasonable time, but I always am finding I'm up, you know.
Yeah.
Ungodly hours, but my alarm goes off, and it's funny because it's a blaring alarm, and it says time to write. You know, it's very ominous, and so mm-hmm. I get up and I do that daily, and I also take time off work. I take stints of vacation wherever I can, long weekends, and I get some work done there as far as writing and trying to get the word count and in.
That's great.
And I do give myself deadlines and try really hard to meet them, and mm-hmm. And so I make it work, you know. Lunchtimes, mm-hmm. there's little pockets of time through the day that you have to really be committed and say, I'm gonna do this.
Mm-hmm. That's what it sounds like.
I'm not gonna be let the distractions come in.
Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of them.
There is a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you'll see me for long stretches of time, not on social media mm-hmm. or things. The book's the most important thing.
I'm amazed by authors that are on social media constantly. I mean, I love it as a reader, you know, the interaction and just seeing them on there. But it's also like, oh my goodness, like, how do you make it all work? Like, I'm in awe of it. And then also just like, I just have no idea. Like, these people must sleep like 3 hours a night. Like, that's the only thing I can imagine.
Yeah. 5 hours feels like sleeping into me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. So I have a question. So do you use a pen name? Do you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So how did you decide on a pen name? Like,
I don't know. It was hard when I first got out. My name is both popular and the last name is not so popular, but there was a lot of them out there. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to go and get handles and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. it's just not happening. Mm-hmm. Everything was kind of taken, you know, unless I wanted to be stuck with an org or net, you mm-hmm. know. Again, when I said I first came here and couldn't find a community or I didn't have time to go out and produce that, somebody had given me, oh, well, there's this community on this virtual game called Second Life, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I got on, immediately got off. I go, you need a second life to have this, you know, to mm-hmm. do this? I said, I guess there are, you know, pockets of communities within this game. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you get to choose your first name. It chose your last name. And so I really liked the name.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, I really like this name. I'm going to do it. And so that's who I became.
Yeah. I feel like the name Shadow fits with what you're writing mm-hmm. and the genre and the way you have your website and everything put together. So I was like, it seems very fitting.
It was a gamble because mm-hmm. I know it's not your mill or what we consider real name. But it's in homage to my favorite book I told you earlier, Shadow Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been, mm-hmm. You know, everything's always been shadow throughout my life. But and then cool. when the lightener came on, I was like, yeah, that's really just cool.
Yeah, to go with it. So one thing that I'm moderately obsessed with as readers and then authors, experiencing, especially because the romance genre, we all know it gets a bad rap.
Mm.
It's undeserved, but it does. So do you have any sort of moment of kind of where somebody else like tried to shame you as either like a reader or an author of romance?
No, I can say I've been pretty fortunate. I'm surrounded by a lot of readers, and we, you know, share books all the time, mm-hmm. even at my office that I work at. But I think as a writer, you know, you get, what a nice little hobby you have there. Though I don't know if that was so much because of the genre mm-hmm. or if it was just tempting to write, period. But, yeah, it was, you know, so it's been kind of reduced to a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until you actually go out in there and do it that you start getting the support. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, look, I'm doing this. And, you know, I put my first book out there and the second one's coming out this year in the series. And you just keep doing it. And mm-hmm. eventually people are like, okay, she might be a little serious about this.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And, but I don't know that it was, I definitely haven't, let's see. Probably 50 Shades of kept a little quiet until I found all that everybody else was reading
it, right?
You know, and I did put it off for a long time until after I started with Gray, actually.
Mm.
So, I'm not going there, and I did. And once I did, there was no going back, but but it definitely wasn't like, you know, watching 90210 when you're in college and your dirty little secret. We're pretty much open, with the people that I'm around, and we share titles and stuff like that. So I've been
awesome.
Pretty fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of authors who have.
Yeah.
And a lot of readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we find each other, we're like, oh, you know.
It's so exciting.
It is exciting. Yeah. It's like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Well, if you read this and you love this, mm-hmm. and, you know, the sharing begins. But until you get there, I guess it is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. It's a little, I think as a reader, until I really kind of discovered, like, that there were all these people online, like reading romance, writing about romance, you know, social, you know, connecting and everything, I kind of felt like very isolated. Like I didn't realize that so many people were reading this. And so when I found that, I was like, oh my gosh, I have found my tribe of people. Like it feels very like
it's a nice
fit. It is. And you know, it's kind of validating. I'm like, I'm not the only one doing this.
See?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you hear that like romance sells like over $1 billion annually, you're like, oh yeah, I am not the only one.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's pretty astounding. So, you know.
And it's a wonderful community, mm-hmm. to, you know, the more supportive group of women, mm-hmm. and men. We have a lot of men writers out there that write and read romance. They're probably, you know, shamed more than probably. Women are. But,
probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's a...
Yeah.
It's a really great community, mm-hmm. not just as readers, but as writers, mm-hmm. To be a part of.
It would seem that way. And, you know, outsider looking in, like, Eliza helped connect me with a bunch of people from Maryland Romance Writers Group, and which was fantastic. She doesn't have to do that. And, you know, some other authors have been fantastic in working with me. I mean, I'm just a fledgling little person here, you know, to do this. But it's been a lot of fun. And I was telling Alexa, for the most part, it feels a lot like women helping other women, which is just amazing. And not to discount that there are men writers. I just haven't I haven't run into many of them yet. So but I'm open to it. So
yes, well, I go to the meetings and can attest that there's some really great, mm-hmm. Prolific men writers out there.
Oh, I'm sure.
And readers. So I couldn't agree more. Everybody's just been so wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, when you do, you go in, it's like you have that imposter kind of feeling, mm-hmm. like who am I? I know a lot of us feel that way when you, mm-hmm. go in, but everybody's so easy to get along with, and
yeah.
have you heard, and sharing, and mm-hmm. And helping each other out.
That's great.
It is a wonderful.
Yeah, you know, which is interesting because, like, at the Baltimore Book Festival, they have those panels. So, you know, on a panel, you'll see, like, the couple panels that I sat and watched this year, like, Jennifer Armentrout, who's like a national best-selling author, and she's sitting there with these authors, you know, there were like Sonali Dev was there, and then some like very local, which is great because we all have to start somewhere, you know, maybe have one or two books published. And so I'm like, this is amazing. And you know, they're just these six authors up there that are just sharing their experiences, and none of them are acting like one is better than the other. And I'm sure I can kind of get where at first it's kind of like that imposter syndrome, like,
yeah,
hey.
Yeah, I'm not real. Yeah. This is, but yes, I mean, that's the greatness, the experience of it, the sharing. I mean, nobody was born a New York bestseller.
Right.
You know, they all did the work, mm-hmm. put their butt in the seat, mm-hmm. got it done. And got there, mm-hmm. And that they're able to, you know, turn around and go to the next one. You can do it too,
mm-hmm.
and support that has just been. I mean, it's who yeah. wouldn't want to be around that?
Right,
so you can do it. You're your own personal cheerleaders, and yeah, I mean, it's. I think at first it was intimidating, but mm-hmm. It's more of a guidepost
mm-hmm.
now,
right?
You know, like a. I can do this.
Sure. Yeah.
They did it. I can do it.
That's right. If they did it, you can do it. And I know that you can. So for your books, are you traditionally published? Are you indie published?
I'm indie published.
Okay.
At the moment, I do have, a sci-fi and a few other things that are, that I'm trying to, you know, this being submitted and is mm-hmm. out there for traditional publishing. But right now, it's just the novella that I have that's actually a free kind of test, giveaway, mm-hmm. whatever, for my mailing list. And then I have the series, the young adult paranormal romance series that is out. The first one
mm-hmm.
Is up on everywhere. And and the second one's going to be coming out. So I kind of made a decision on that one, more of a get my feet wet, learn the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
I think to master anything, you know, you kind of have to go through that learning process, and this was my way of doing that, mm-hmm. going through the learning process of publishing. And I know traditional is different, but it still gave me a lot of chops and knowing what goes into making a book and
sure.
and having that control over it. As a visual person, I like to do my covers, and
mm-hmm.
I even have covers for books that aren't, you know, aren't published there.
Yeah.
But if I get the idea, you mm-hmm. should see that first and put that up. I think that I would definitely, you know, have some things out there that I'll probably be hybrid.
Okay.
And go the traditional route. I just think that each book is definitely, I didn't go and go, well, if this one didn't make it, I self-publish it. No, I made decisions on certain mm-hmm. ones that I think would be better traditionally, or would have a better chance traditionally published than, and then other ones that I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to self-publish this. I think this can take off and, mm-hmm. and do well on its own, and I can get it marketed fairly well
mm-hmm.
On my own. So, I mean, I think it's book by book for me.
Sure.
I did start out with YA because that was my first love, and again, it was a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think that it's hard to, you know, that's one of part of the learning experiences. It's hard to self-publish YA. I think there's a lot of more gatekeepers and a lot of things that you have to go through. It's not impossible to get an audience mm-hmm. for that, but it's a lot more difficult. So I think that those kinds of books in the future that I write will push more traditional.
Okay. Yeah.
So they can be in a brick and mortar and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But those gates are opening up. It's changing every day.
Yeah, it really seems to be. Like, when I really got heavy into reading romance, probably like 6 or 7 years ago, like everything that I was reading was traditionally published, coming out of like a publishing house mm-hmm. somewhere. And, you know, I would find when I switched to reading Kindle, then I found all these things. I mean, just all sorts of self-published. And, you know, for a good couple of years, I was very hesitant to read them because, you know, I'd read a couple where the quality was really low, poor editing. I mean, and I think that was just part of the times. But as it's evolved, like, I can hardly tell a difference unless I look to know that it's like self-published or indie published versus a traditional publishing house, other than the price typically.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really the big indicator, but
yeah, that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah.
But, I agree. I think that, authors are becoming way more savvy about, you know, making sure you hire a professional,
mm-hmm.
To edit and, do your covers and things that, traditionally, they're probably, you know, because you want it to stand up
mm-hmm.
Between the two. And, you know, those that don't, you know, the reviews show, and,
right.
and they usually fall.
Right.
The cream usually comes to the top.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but then the biggest piece, it would seem like, that's missing without the traditional publishing is the marketing and, you know, that.
Yeah, but as I'm sure you've heard, that pretty much falls on the
yeah.
author anymore these days. Yeah, I think it would be, you know, they offer a lot of advice and help and guidance in those areas. But, of course, the work still falls. I think that's a misnomer that
mm-hmm.
That they'll take on all the marketing and things like that for you. But they sure would help with the guidance
mm-hmm.
and career paths and things like that. That is nice.
That's great, yeah.
But as far as the work, it's still the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's still write a great book. It's still
yeah.
market it, get it out there on social media and talk with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk with people.
Talk with people.
And interact.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and go from there. So you had mentioned that you also do visual arts.
Mm.
And I was creeping on your one of your pages. I saw that you also crochet.
Yeah. I do a little bit of everything. Oh, do you? From stained glass to, I don't do that much anymore with the lid, but because the kids. But I've always been an artist of some form or another. Creativity is air, you know. So, yes, I crochet. I enjoy that. That was also another what do I do with myself time in my life. And somebody taught me crochet, and everybody got an Afghan that Christmas. And until I discovered, you know, until I could get out and get into the community again. I had married somebody in the Marine Corps, so and we drive a lot. And, you know, every time you go to kind of a new place, it's that to like, get out and learn, yeah, life changing.
Starting
so,
over.
So crochet was one of those things I picked up along the way. And, I do still enjoy that. And when I'm getting stuck, it's good to just go and do something else. The digital collage, which I do all on my iPhone. I think I do everything on my iPhone. That came from just, you know, I'm on Instagram, and I just kind of saw all this and people doing this. It was a new movement, mobile art movement, and I was so fascinated. It's like, what, I can really just do this? I can do this waiting in line. I can do digital collage wherever. And it was a fascinating time to be in there. And so I became obsessed with digital collage using iPhone apps and that kind of thing. So, and it was good, too, because when I was first coming out, I didn't have that much material to put out there. And it was, you know, something to put out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. Well, I think that wraps about all the things I wanted to go over with you today, Shadow.
Absolutely. So nice meeting you, Keena.
Nice meeting you, too. Thank you so much for coming in and doing this episode with me. And I look forward to more of your books and more stuff from you.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Romance Romp is produced by Graham Cullen, Chris Sands, and me. Join me next week when I sit down with author Melinda Valentine.